you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
I'm Tracy Thomas, host of One for the Books, a live literary event series from LAist. We are back with guests, author Amanda Montell, and actor Bella Lavelle. You can find us on May 15th at the Crawford Family Forum. Tickets at laist.com/events.
LAist Studios.
When you come into Kiso, on your left, you're going to be greeted by beautiful tables.
Back in March, we met up with my friend Oliver Alpuche at Kiso, his soon-to-be-open new gay bar in downtown LA's historic core.
The bar, back bar, is actually original to Score, original to Bar 107.
That bar, he and his team were busy putting finishing touches on the space. Kiso means kiss in the Esperanto language. The decor is in khaki and forest green colors to make you feel like you're in a jungle. The other two rooms have dance floors and a small stage. Oliver says he really wanted to create something that would transport you to a place in Latin America while still hanging out in downtown.
One of the reasons why I love downtown is because there is so much history here, but what I'm waiting for is for more people to bring their small businesses here so we could really flourish.
This is How to LA, the podcast that explores how Angelenos connect with the city and its different neighborhoods. I'm your host, Brian De Los Santos. This is the second episode exploring downtown LA, part of our series on LA neighborhoods. Last time, we covered some of the history of the area and the ups and downs it experienced over the years. If you missed that, go check it out on our feed. Today, we're looking at its present and possible future through Oliver's story. He's sort of an advocate for this neighborhood. Oliver has lived in downtown LA for 16 years. I first met him at a bar he opened downtown on South Los Angeles Street in 2015. It was called The Red Line. At the time, I was working downtown LA too at the LA Times. And just a couple of months before Redline opened, another gay bar called Precinct opened a few blocks away. Then another queer space, Bar Mattachine, opened that year nearby. It was an exciting time for LA nightlife.
We had Mattachine, Precinct, and Redline, and it was magical. But as the years turned, the areas changed.
Bar Mattachine closed in 2018, and my old employer, the LA Times, moved from its original downtown headquarters to a new office out in El Segundo that same year. And then, of course, there was the pandemic. It hit all bars and restaurants, including Redline, hard.
The pandemic hit, and it kind of drained it of life. And I feel like if you think about it as a forest fire, we went through a forest fire downtown. And I feel like even with our move here, it's kind of like the sprouting of the new forest, because as a business owner that closed my business, it really is shedding that kind of skin of like, okay, I'm so proud of what we were able to accomplish, but like, it's time for a new start. We need to let that go so we could grow into something bigger and better.
That something bigger and better, Oliver hopes, is Kiso. He's handing over the role of owner to Brad Nitz, who also worked at Redline, to focus his attention on Downtown LA Proud, a nonprofit he founded back in 2016 to help empower the queer community downtown. And Oliver is really invested in making Kiso succeed.
All right, let's just start where we're at now. What's the plan for this awesome space?
So this awesome space, there's a lot of history in this space, and there's a reason why we kind of jumped on it, slash why we're closing down Redline, why Brad is opening up Kiso, and why I'm focused on making sure that that happens. In the space that we are now, in the mid-80s, there was the oldest gay bar known, or the oldest gay bar in downtown called Score. Score occupied this space, and it was a Latin gay bar that had drag shows, dancers, you name it, it was here.
Love
so
that.
Think of the like original tempo.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Right?
And so, tempo's like a Latino gay bar with Latino music, exactly. English music, top 40, yeah.
So, you know, I am too young. No, just kidding. but it's funny because I knew this space. So I moved downtown 2008, and I knew this space as Bar 107. And then when I opened up Redline, I heard about Score and just the history that Bar 107 has and Score had in this space. So when it became available, we're like, we need to bring back a historic queer space and modernize it, of course, and bring it back to its glory.
The historic building where Kiso is located, formerly Bar 107, and before that, Score, is one of those buildings in the historic core that was transformed by adapted reuse, which we heard about in episode 1. It opened in 1897 as a Van Nuys hotel, and it was fancy. It was the first hotel in LA to offer electricity and telephones in every room. It would later become the Barclay Hotel, and then low-income housing. And while there was talk of turning it into a luxury boutique hotel, with renovations beginning in April of 2020, that didn't happen. New owners in 2021 kept it as housing for people who are very low income or formerly homeless. And the building has also kept its sense of history and character. The lobby has been used for filming movies like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, where it was supposed to be a bar in Bogota, and a vacant ground floor space was turned into a cafe for the rom-com 500 Days of Summer.
So tell me about the hardships of operating a business here in downtown LA and in this area of downtown LA, because when we talk about downtown LA, there's a lot of neighborhoods, right? There's Bunker Hill, there's Skid Row, there's the business district. We're here around Civic Center slash, what would you call this?
Civic Center slash Historic Core. It's like on the opposite end. You could even tie it into the theater district. We're really in a like key corner point of these different districts. So like you said, downtown, every street is different. We are, what, 4 blocks away from Redline, but the feel is so different. I think after COVID, a lot of things went downhill. You know, there's fencing on Main Street on the corner of Redline on Main and 6th that has been up for 3 years. And it's just not an environment that's welcoming. Whereas you go 4 blocks away and we have a tree-lined street with string lighting from building to building. You have opened restaurants and other bars, and it's a little more activated than where Redline is. When we opened Redline, all the shops were full. We were the last one. The space that we occupied was empty for, one side of it was empty for 5 years, one side was empty for 11 years.
Wow.
So when we came in, we were like that corner block of like, oh wow, this has really changed. It was great for like 5 years. And then, you know, life happens. Mm-hmm. COVID happened.
But I think part of the story that's here is a homegrown Angelino who is from the city, grew up in Highland Park, and has roots here. Your whole family, most of your family's here. And then you've become an ambassador for downtown. I don't know many people who are able to do that, even though they're probably little ambassadors in their own communities. But you've done it for the queer community. You've done it for nightlife. You've done it for downtown. Like, that's a lot. Well, how do you feel? What is it?
Don't make me cry right now. I remember everyone thought I was crazy because I bought a condo in downtown, and I was like, they're like, you're crazy. Why are you moving down there? But when I first moved here, and I lived a couple years in apartments, and it was amazing. I had an apartment above the Orpheum Theater. I lived across the street at the Continental Building. And I just loved it because downtown was that sense of community that I grew up with that I never had anywhere else in LA. So I lived in Palms, I lived in Studio City, I lived in West Hollywood, and I never, in those places, I never got to know my neighbors, ever. And it's weird, I grew up in Highland Park, but I grew up on a street where it's like the neighbors would watch your dog when you went on vacation or left. You go to everyone's birthday parties, and you just had this sense of community. Downtown gave me that. And we all used to have parties at each other's house, get to know each other. We used to play a game where it's like, we're going to go around and like name all the new things that are opening up downtown. Oh, wow. And I remember we got to 119 the first year that I lived here. It was like 119.
You were counting.
Yeah, it was like so many things were happening here, and it was so amazing. Never felt unsafe. It was great. It was getting cleaner. When Breadline opened, that entire like Los Angeles started to get cleaned up. There was shops going on in Los Angeles, whether it was a like daycare for a pet store, a clothing store, a gym, all this life came to the city.
As for what downtown is like now, there are definitely things Oliver would change. For one thing, housing affordability.
How do my bartenders, my barbacks, my security guards, how do they enjoy the city that they work in and play in, but they can't live here? And it's just like one of those things. It's like they make too much for the transitional housing, but they don't make enough for just a standard apartment because everything that is built is high-end luxury.
Another issue, he says, is the red tape involved in opening a small business.
We talk about revitalization, but why is it that it takes a year and a half to just open a business? Like, that doesn't make sense. It's paperwork, right?
But despite the challenges, Oliver is still a champion of downtown.
For those who are downtown haters, what do you got to say to them? Because you are a fan, you are a founder, you are an ambassador of this area.
I guess for all the haters of downtown, I would say, like, come experience it before you open your mouth, to be honest. Because even my own family members, like, some of them are like, ooh, downtown. But then it's like, I see why you live here. Oh, I remember my brother, he lives in Sierra Madre, which is like ultra suburbia. And he's been helping out a lot here. And he's like, oh my God, every food we've had down here is amazing. I was like, exactly. Downtown has so much to offer. And like you said earlier, there's so many distinct districts of downtown. Like, okay, great. You don't like the financial district. Neither do I. But guess where I do like is the fashion district. Or if that's not your cup of tea, you have the theater district or the historic core. So it all depends on you. So if you're a hater, maybe you don't know what you like and you haven't explored it.
Mic drop. That was so good. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you.
After the break, we'll explore a little bit more of downtown and really get a sense of what Oliver mentioned about how the neighborhood can differ so much from block to block.
Support for LAist comes from Latino Theater Company at the Los Angeles Theater Center, presenting the world premiere of Mix Mix, the Filipino Adventures of a German Jewish Boy by Boney B. Alvarez. Inspired by true events from the life of Ralph Price. After escaping Nazi Germany, a newfound tropical refuge in the Philippines is upended when Japan invades the islands. On stage through June 16th. Tickets and information at latinotheaterco.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
And we're back with our exploration of downtown. From Kiso, we headed out to explore some more of the surrounding neighborhood. The we was me and Hadalay team members, Erica Washington and Monica Bushman, and LAist visual journalist, Samantha Hilu Hernandez. Erica lives downtown, and Samantha has reported on the area. She also remembers Kiso's days as Bar 107, a dive bar that closed down in 2015. We decided to head toward the former location of the Nickel Diner, a beloved neighborhood restaurant that closed in 2023 after 15 years in business, to kind of see what the area feels like now.
We're at the busy corner of Fifth and Main, and you can see the Rosslyn Lofts, which is a very busy apartment building. We see old buildings here as well. But also on the other side, we see a corridor of businesses. Those lead to Skid Row and that area. But again, this is daytime in downtown LA. There's a lot of cars, a lot of buses running through here.
And a lot of foot traffic.
And a lot of foot traffic.
We stopped at a small breakfast and lunch spot called the Monte Carlo Cafe. It's less than a block over from where the Nickel Diner used to be. And Monte Carlo is an old school diner itself with a classic U-shaped counter.
Hi, are you Cesar? Hi, I'm Monica. Nice to meet you.
We were interested in checking out the Monte Carlo because from their Instagram, it looked like they might have opened during the pandemic. But as we learned, the cafe has been around a lot longer than that.
My name is Cesar Amantes.
And are you the owner?
I'm the owner from Monte Carlo.
I also learned that Cesar and I had a connection when I asked if he was from LA.
I'm from Mexico. I don't know.
¿De cuál parte?
Veracruz.
What? Yo soy jarocho también.
Yeah?
What part? Orizaba?
Yeah, I'm from Orizaba.
What? No way!
I'm from Orizaba, yeah.
All right, now that we're on a good vibe. So tell me about your spot. How long you been open?
Well, the business has been open for 53 years. We just bought the business from some other people. We've been here for 4 years. And we got the business right before the pandemic. So it's been, the first year it was hard. But then other than that, it's been good now. It's been good the 3 years.
Yeah.
Cesar points to the good food and low prices as reasons why the cafe was able to survive the pandemic. When we were there, it was closing, but folks were still coming in, picking up to-go orders.
We used to be two people only, me and the chef. Now we're six people. So it's getting better every day for us.
Outside the Monte Carlo, I talked with Erica about her experience living in downtown. She moved here because her family lives in South LA and we work in Pasadena. So downtown was the sweet spot.
I was looking on Zillow and I found this place that was above my budget, but I could like barely afford it. And it was very nice. It had everything, all the things I needed for an apartment. And I was somewhat familiar with downtown, so I stuck with it. It reminds me a little bit of New York. I used to live out there. I used to live in Harlem. And so just like, it's very communal, like Oliver said. This space is still very communal. You see a lot of people all the time. You know, everything is in close distance to one another. You know, Grand Central Market is right across the street from me. And all these restaurants, coffee shops, and things like that.
It's about maybe 2 years since you lived here. What do you see in downtown LA that might be different from other communities in LA?
You see a wide variety of people. I think this is where you find the most diversity in LA. Like black, white, Asian, Hispanic, like everybody's down here. So I think that's what makes it different, because I think LA can be very segregated. I also think it's different. One thing about LA is like you really see like this wide disparity between the people, the haves and the have-nots. And so you see that. You see a lot of people struggling out here. So that's another way this place is kind of different.
So kind of for this story, we did ask you, so what's up with the neighborhood council? And you did go, and what'd you hear? What were people telling you about downtown?
The idea behind neighborhood councils in LA is to help residents have more representation at City Hall.
So I went to a neighborhood council a few months ago, and I talked to three neighborhood council members, and they all told me that, you know, downtown LA has come a long way. And now it's growing.
My name is J. Ellis McGinnis. There's a lot happening downtown, differently than even in like, you know, Beverly Hills or in West Hollywood. There are pockets of it, but not like that constant flow of culture and ideas and stuff. So that's one of the things I like about downtown.
I'm Claudia Oliveira. So I've been in the council for 7 years. I feel that as a downtowner, you kind of learn how to navigate downtown. In a way, the more commerce that we have, the better the streets are, the more eyes on the streets we get. But in order for the small business to survive, the city has to be more welcoming when it comes, you know, to offering them opportunities to hold their hands through the permitting processes.
They want to see small businesses grow. And so that's a big emphasis that I saw at the Neighborhood Council, is this emphasis on seeing small businesses thrive here, especially after the pandemic where a lot of businesses closed.
To get away from some of the street noise and get some food, we ducked into Yuko Kitchen. I'd been here before for a Cheap Fast Eats episode. That's episode 45, by the way. Yuko is a casual Japanese restaurant and plant store. Owner Yuko Watanabe actually started selling plants during the pandemic to help make up for lost business. Over rice bowls, I asked Samantha about her view of downtown as a transplant Angeleno and as someone who's done reporting and research for grad school about the area.
So you have some history with downtown. Tell me, what was the vibe like when you started coming out and exploring it and really experiencing parts of downtown?
So I started coming to downtown when I was in college at USC, 2010, 2011. And then once I turned 21, a few years later, then I started coming down here more often to like the bar scene. And I would say like my regular spot that I still love and hold dear to my heart is La Cita, which is on 4th and Hill. And that's a really historic spot that's been in downtown for a really long time and catered to Latino immigrants for a while. And then, you know, with new ownership, they kind of like changed the programming to attract like more like new generations. But they still, you know, stay with their like Sunday dance day for the like older Latino folks that have been going there for a long time. So that's kind of my experience there. And I would also go to New Jalisco, which is like a queer Latino bar on Main. There's been a lot of loss of like these like more historic kind of like divey neighborhood bars. But I'm really happy that places like La Cita and New Jalisco still live on.
Do you feel like downtown has always had this like alternative? I hate saying the word alternative because catering to Latino immigrants shouldn't feel alternative, but it kind of is. It's not the mainstream, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, something that's interesting, like when I was doing research for my grad school thesis, which was about La Cita, was, you know, you hear a lot of people say like, oh, in the 90s or in the 80s, like downtown, like no one went there, or like, you know, there was the financial district and the bankers and stuff would work there, and then like you would leave, like you wouldn't stay there. And you know, that's partly true. I'm sure like a lot of it, there wasn't really like a super vibrant nightlife scene, but downtown has been a place that Latinos go to for a really long time. Like the Broadway corridor, if you go, like it's lots of shops like catering to Latinos, quinceañera dresses, like restaurants. And I think even when I started coming to downtown LA, by then like the gentrification of downtown had definitely started, like places like 7th and Grand, and like that was like the cocktail mixology kind of boom of the time. So that had already started, but there was still, yeah, very much of like an alternative kind of scene. Like I think, you know, it was cheap to rent lofts here, so obviously that's always going to attract like artists and musicians. And you know, like my favorite bartender at La Cita, like the homie Rommel, he lives in downtown, and I don't know if that's possible as much anymore to like be a bartender in downtown and live here because of like the rising rent. So there's definitely been a shift that I've noticed since I've started coming here. So you see a lot of like boutique hotels and like cocktail bars with like mixology drinks, people renting lofts for a lot of money. And I think that's brought in like a different demographic, while at the same time you have the like unhoused people like living on Skid Row that are being pushed and pushed. So it's created this really intense like wealth disparity that creates, I think, kind of like a weird tension, and the environment feels very different than when I was coming down here, where it was like a little bit more mixed, like different classes, you know?
Yeah, as you were talking, I was just thinking about the issues you've highlighted, which includes homelessness and high rents and the fact that most people probably can't eat and play and work in downtown. And now I'm thinking about it, like, it seems like downtown LA is kind of like Los Angeles in a neighborhood scale. Like, a lot of people are being priced out of Los Angeles proper. I don't know, just hearing you talk about it made me kind of realize downtown is kind of like a neighborhood to see like how Los Angeles, greater Los Angeles, kind of is, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a microcosm of LA in that way, because a lot of the homelessness issue is concentrated here, and a lot of wealth is also concentrated here. So you kind of see those two things kind of at play, and it brings those problems that we're dealing with in the city, like, they're really stark here. I miss when it was like more people could exist here, you know? I'll still go to La Cita, and La Cita still feels the same, but I think a lot of the people that were regulars there, they've moved away. So that's where I hope, like, you know, there will be better solutions for that. So, like, downtown can become, like, a vibrant space that people, like you said, people can, like, live, play, and work here.
So, like we said in episode one, downtown is a lot of things, and people have all sorts of feelings and thoughts about it. There's concern about what it is, mostly unaffordable, but optimism about where it's going, or at least about the possibility for a renewed, thriving nightlife like there was before the pandemic. But the main things I took away in making this episode was the rich history, both in architecture and moments, and also how much it really is a community, whether it's neighbors hanging out or people just coming together and enjoying a certain corner of it. Really, if you haven't hung out here, you really should. So now I want to pitch you my top three things to do in downtown LA. One, visit Grand Central Market because that's also a microcosm of LA food. Two, the museums are really dope. And some of them have free exhibitions or days, so check those out. And lastly, if you like walking and architecture, go to a walking tour of downtown with the LA Conservancy Group. You might learn something new about downtown LA. And that is it for us today. Thanks so much for listening and going on this exploration of downtown LA with us. We still want to continue to profile LA neighborhoods. So if you want to pitch your neighborhood, where you work at, or where you live, let us know. Hit us up on howtoLA@scpr.org. Oh, hey, and one more thing. I'm going to be at the LA Times Festival of Books this weekend with the LAist team. They'll be there on Saturday doing a live recording for the radio. And on Sunday, I will be hosting our social media and recording some interviews for the podcast. So come on Sunday and check me out. Come say hi. We'll have some How to LA swag. And who knows, maybe you'll end up on our social media or on the podcast. All right, catch you there. Bye. Support for this podcast is made possible by Gordon and Donna Crawford, who believe that quality journalism makes Los Angeles a better place to live.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at laist.com/sweeps.